If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Newton Media Group, a family of creative services, presents the Voice Over Work podcast, an eclectic collection of viewpoints, water cooler knowledge, and inspirational stories from some of the newest audiobooks on the market. This is Russell Newton. I'll be your host for the podcast, and thank you for listening. Hope things are going well for you today. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at Underdog Thinking, A Bold Idea, A Business Adventure, and 101 Lessons Learned Along the Way. Atul Veer, edited by Emily Hubble. Chapter 1, Crossroads. And the road will be muddy and rough, but we'll get there. Heaven knows how we will get there. We know we will. Woyaya by O.C. Bisa. When the third bullet whizzed by my office window, I knew the time had come. The military coup d'etat had been hanging over Lagos, Nigeria for months, a rain cloud growing heavy and dark as it threatened to burst. Whispers had been traveling from person to person along Awolowo Road, the location of my office, near the seat of the military government. The rumors had also put the British import-export company I worked for in a stranglehold. I knew that as soon as the government was overthrown, our company would get buried in the country's financial ruin. Now, on this otherwise typical weekday evening, the coup was finally erupting outside my office window. Everything was beginning to crumble. It was time to leave Nigeria. I should have known my time in Africa would end this way. The circumstances that brought me there were a whirlwind adventure, and it only made sense for my journey to wrap up in a similar fashion. The continent had always held great fascination for me. Africa's coast was more than 5,000 miles from Pune, the bustling city in India I called home, and Lovedale, the remote mountain town where I had attended a military boarding school steeped in history and tradition. For years, I had felt Africa's pull from halfway across the world. I still remember the way our housemaster gathered together my classmates each night for his reading of King Solomon's Mines. In the famous adventure story, Sir Henry Curtis and Captain Good come to Africa to find Sir Henry's brother, who disappeared while searching for long lost. Chapter 2, The Beginning. America, as a haven not only for the poor and oppressed, but also for the skilled and ambitious, is deeply ingrained in our national spirit. Fred Barnes, The Weekly Standard. You're going to do what? I could hardly blame my wife for being shocked. For as long as she had known me, I'd been the hard-working manager of an international trade company. Yes, I oversaw many aspects of the business there autonomously and was deep in my boss's inner circle. But at the end of each workday, I went home knowing I was running someone else's show. Unfortunately, that someone's missteps had brought the show to an abrupt end. From where I sat now, freshly washed up on America's shores without a solid job prospect, I suddenly saw the horizon transform before my eyes. The endless piles of rejection letters and wanted ads whirled up into the wind, uncovering a path that seemed to stretch out endlessly. Maybe entrepreneurship had always been in the back of my mind. Perhaps I just needed a tough situation, like this one, to nudge me in that direction. Whatever the case, from that moment on, starting a business was all I could see and think about. I had moved to America around Valentine's Day 1991. Saddam Hussein had attacked Kuwait, and the country was in the throes of the Gulf War. It was a recession. The country and the world were in an unstable place.
I told my family I was moving to America shortly thereafter. And by April 1st, just 45 days later, I was opening my doors for business. It was April Fool's Day. I'd soon see the full irony in that. Starting a business was no joke, but I never expected it to consume every fiber of my being. Chapter 3, The Idea. Every morning in Africa, a gazelle wakes up. It must run faster than the fastest lion, or it will be killed. Every morning, a lion wakes up. It must outrun the slowest gazelle, or it will starve to death. It doesn't matter whether you're a lion or a gazelle. When the sun comes up, you'd better be running. Abe Gubegna, Ethiopia. My wife was in the laundry room again, shuffling a soggy mountain of socks and shirts to the dryer. The life we'd settled into in Houston was becoming a big departure from our African days, when there was a perilous exploit at every turn and vivid scenes that make our dinner guests' eyes go wide with awe. No, Houston was no Africa. And that Sunday morning in Houston, as my wife diligently worked through load after load of dirty clothes, I found myself pining for the African coast. There was no forgetting the shimmering blue water and the broad rocky formations that followed the skyline, elegantly interrupting the Gulf's glassy flow. "Remember how beautiful it was in Lomé?" I asked my wife that morning. "Why don't we go to the beach and relax? If we leave for Galveston soon, we can still catch most of the daylight." Lomé was the French-speaking capital of Togo, a thin sliver of a country 50 miles wide and 500 miles long. It had once been a center of the slave trade, and the coastline still bore the scars of its denigrating past in the shape of forts that had been processing centers for human trafficking. In contemporary times, it was known as the Switzerland of Africa for its free trade and open banking practices. Yet, even so, questionable activity, such as the suspicious oil tankers that claimed their space a few miles offshore, continued to recall the blighted reputation of trade in the region. Chapter 4, The Hunt. It always seems impossible until it's done. Nelson Mandela. Houston, New York, London. Within a few months, I had trekked far and wide, scouring the globe for a manufacturer who could help me bring the combo washer dryer to America. The stores in London, where the gizmo sat proudly among the sea of appliances, told me their suppliers worked only in Europe. And back in America, where my import-export business was still trudging along, my family and sole employee were beginning to doubt whether I would ever return home from my explorations with the prize in hand. My first clue came not in America or England. It came while I was sitting in the German consulate in Houston, anxiously awaiting an appointment with the business consul. I fidgeted in my chair, impatient and a bit discouraged, as I flipped through a promotional magazine to pass the time. My eyes scanned the pages at warp speed. Jewelry, food, trinkets, on every page, a different retailer pushed a different product, hoping to entice the casual reader. I was not captivated, until suddenly I spotted it. It was a glossy, full-page ad for Domotechnica, the world's largest appliance trade show, taking place in Cologne, Germany the following month. "This is where I'll find the treasure," I thought. I left the office without taking my appointment, a wary explorer lit up at this new possibility. Nothing is impossible. There is always a way. I walked up to the chain-smoking sales manager at booth 451B. His foggy eyes and hunched posture told me he was running on fumes, and for good reason. It was 4 p.m. on the last... Chapter 5, The Dive. No man ever steps in the same river twice, for it's not the same river, and he's not the same man. Heraclitus, Greece, 535 BC. The shipment of combos had finally arrived at the warehouse. I may have been short on money, but I was full of anticipation as I began unpacking the combos. Soon, these shiny white appliances would be leaving this warehouse, destined for major retailers and ultimately homes around the country. 3 months earlier, that warehouse space hadn't existed. I'd cashed out every credit card to get the combos to America, but that didn't mean I was home free. After hanging up the phone with Campari that day, I quickly realized that I still had another major hurdle. I had nowhere to store the machines. The largest space I had access to was my in-law's garage, and I could imagine their frustration were I to pack two machines there, let alone 54. The homeowners association would likely be just as aggravated at the sight of 52-foot trucks trundling down the bucolic streets of its residential neighborhood for washing machine pickups. Suddenly, I found myself back at square one. I needed someone else to take a leap of faith in me. When I couldn't find a job, I started my own business. When I couldn't afford an office, I asked the landlord for a little leniency. And when I couldn't find the combo, I went searching around the world for it. Now, with all of these pieces in place, it was time to get creative again. I pulled out the Houston phone book. This was 1992, remember, and started calling every warehouse I could find. When I found one that had space available, I decided to drive there and make my plea in person. "Would it be possible to store my inventory in your warehouse?" I asked a service agent. She had a kind demeanor, but I said... Chapter 6, Growth. Keep your thoughts positive because your thoughts become your words. Keep your words positive because your words become your behavior. Keep your behavior positive because your behavior becomes your habits. Keep your habits positive because your habits become your values. Keep your values positive because your values become your destiny. Mahatma Gandhi. It had been nearly 7 years since the press campaign that had catapulted my once elusive combo into the spotlight. From that point on, Equator was blasting off like a Formula One racer. In the beginning, the success came in clear increments. There was the first customer, the Boston chain that had agreed to purchase 12 machines outright. Then came the first dealers, the first major retail chain, and around 1996, the first $1 million in sales. With each milestone, I felt more confident to build up staff, grow our product line, and launch marketing campaigns that showed we could compete with the big dogs. Equator had transformed into a real business, and I was getting my first taste of the rewards of entrepreneurship. But it didn't come easily. Capital was still a challenge to obtain, even with orders in hand. A regional distributor in the Midwest had placed an order for $100,000, but I had to explain to him that I didn't have the money to fulfill the order. The owner asked me what had become a very familiar question: "Are you good for the money?" I answered yes, and he stared at me motionless for what seemed like a long time. Pulling his checkbook from his coat pocket, he wrote out a $100,000 check, handed it to me, and walked away. This became our ongoing story. When capital was short, somehow a solution always... Chapter 7, The Pinnacle. To strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield. Alfred Lord Tennyson, Ulysses. The finest building in Chicago had never looked more pristine. As I stepped across the John Hancock Tower's grand marble floors and smiled for photos against its deep mahogany walls, I couldn't help but think to myself, we've made it. Decades ago, when builders first broke ground on the structure, Gene Dixon, who had predicted the assassination of John F. Kennedy, mused about the building's demise, which left many people nervous about the future of the tower. Between the gusts of the windy city and the marshy grounds it was built upon, the odds were stacked against the eighth tallest building in the U.S. from the beginning. Despite its towering presence, a casual observer would likely never have guessed the feat of structural engineering it took to build the impressive Chicago skyline. Fazlur Rahman Khan, a Bangladeshi-American born in undivided India before the partition, had been determined to create a structurally sound building that would exceed the city's wind code. He had brilliantly analyzed several subjects using a washing machine to test perception of movements. Standing atop the unit, he had demonstrated the balance that man and machine could achieve, maintaining a firm stance despite the movement of the machine to show he was still connected to the ground. He carefully documented and applied his findings to the building's design, ensuring the perfect amount of sway to protect the uppermost floors from the city's signature gusts. Despite the dark lining of its past and the swampy base and winds that tore through the city, here we stood, celebrating Equator's achievements in a building that had withstood every force that came against it. It would have been impossible. Chapter 8, The Dark Cloud. Before advancing against men weaker than yourself, ponder when you stood before those more powerful. Tirukural, 25, 248 through 250, Tamil, 200 BC. It had been a whirlwind few weeks. My R&D team had hit a major milestone with our top-secret combo model, which I knew would shake up the appliance industry and solidify our place at the top. Construction on the Equator Plaza was progressing well, but I was overextended and didn't foresee that changing anytime in the foreseeable future unless I took action. I started recruiting a new sales manager to oversee our team of inside salespeople, field sales reps, and distributors, helping prevent a slowdown in the important formative stage. I interviewed a host of colorful characters in search of the perfect fit. Meanwhile, new orders continued to pour in, so it was no surprise that as I sat at my desk that afternoon, still for the first time in weeks, I was greeted with a stack of mail 2 feet tall. I began sifting through them, as I often did in those early years. As I sorted through the mail, junk in one pile, bills in the other, my mind traveled back to my time at boarding school. I was never the most talkative kid, and I had such severe asthma that I often spent more time at the campus hospital than in the dorm with my peers. I was a lonely and ailing 10-year-old, not well enough to attend class or see his friends. During those frustrating months, not much made me smile, but one thing did: letters from my parents. Even now, as Equator continued to hit new milestones, a simple card from a customer or dealer made me happier than any new order. Chapter 9, The Storm. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. William Butler Yeats, The Second Coming. What a beautiful Houston afternoon, I thought, as I sat in my new Equator Plaza office. I gazed out from my window onto the highways below and beyond, watching the world zoom around me. Cars weaved gracefully around one another on the roads. Stoplights flickered green, yellow, and red, and the blue sky was freckled with translucent milky clouds. It was spring 2004. The faint noise from the outside world lulled me into a trance that was suddenly shattered by the telephone's loud scream. "Is this Equator Appliances?" a booming voice demanded the moment I answered. "This is Atul. Who is this?" I asked, taken aback. The angry response shot back without pause. "What in the hell is going on over there at Equator?" In the South, it's not uncommon for a perfectly sunny and cloudless day to transform into a heavy rainstorm in a matter of minutes. And no matter how long you've lived here, these moments can still catch you by complete surprise. Outside my window, the day was still serene and the sun sat high, but inside my office, I felt the first few drops of rain tapping on my shoulder. "I'm sorry, I'm not sure what you mean. How can I help you?" "I've been trying to get a hold of someone in customer service for days. I'm having a serious issue with my combo and I can't get anyone to help me out." "I'm sorry. Can you please tell me what's going on with the machine?" As the customer explained the problem, I realized his story sounded similar to an email I had received several days ago. I had a full... Chapter 10, The Fight. When the enemy advances, we retreat. When the enemy halts, we harass. When the enemy seeks to avoid battle, we attack. When the enemy retreats, we pursue. Sun Tzu, China, 544 BC. We looked out at the devastation around us, a battlefield charred and burned and littered with our failed, burnt-out machines. Fallen soldiers filled every inch of the space. A place with so much hope, was now filled with the aftermath of a unilateral attack none of us saw coming. To ignore such carnage would be a crime, I thought to myself. It was time to wage war. I didn't think it would be this bad, my lawyer said as we walked through the warehouse at the rear of Equator Plaza. I know we've been talking about this for the last 6 months, but now it's so very clear. Equator cannot survive if we don't fight back. It had been more than 6 months since the first signs of the storm had come tumbling down from the sky. I'd spent countless mornings with my lawyer, tracking the storm's course and charting its growth. A terse adventurer, still clinging to the hope that it could all blow over some way, somehow. But now, in this moment, as I showed Clark the extent of the damage for the first time, the product defects suddenly barreled in with more force than we could control. My mind was overcome with a thought that I had never experienced before, a thought that would plague Equator's next chapter. This could all end at any moment. Until now, Clark had cautiously advised me to stay the course. Suing one of the largest appliance manufacturers in the world is a Herculean task, he had told me many mornings over coffee. If you can still fulfill customer warranties, then it... Chapter 11, Back to India. We must broaden the definition of who our neighbors are and extend the boundaries of our interest and empathy. Wendy Kopp, Teach for All, United States. The hope of a coming settlement with Mancini left us feeling as though we were finally in a position to start focusing on business again. All the falling pieces had momentarily faded as we exulted in the soon-to-be defeat of the giant. Despite Mancini's betrayal, we had persevered. The drive to push through had been instilled in me from my earliest days. Even during the most turbulent periods, when every fiber of my being wanted to give up the fight, somewhere deep within, the slightest strength to fight would be ignited. The Lorencian spirit could never die. Despite the ongoing fallout, on that day, we were still running. Rather than allowing the giant to beat us down for good, we began focusing on rebuilding and reframing the broken pieces of the company. Rebuilding would mean seeking new opportunities outside of Equator's turbulent American market, where we could establish ourselves and grow without the pressures and financial difficulties of our current situation. My mind flew back to a recent trip to India. While discussing the business climate of America with a friend, I had learned about India's new incentives to bring foreign business to the East. Tax exemptions and flexible staffing sounded optimal, and I recognized it as a wise move for future market expansion. I began to see offshoring as the best way to navigate our currently treacherous landscape, while increasing relations and visibility in one of the most populated countries in the world. Many companies hesitate to begin the offshoring process. Chapter 12, China. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking. Steve Jobs. When you serve your foe lawsuit papers at the year's biggest industry event, you'd think it would spark immediate action. This was not the case with Mancini. Over the next few months, there was little movement on the lawsuit. The onslaught of defective products, however, smoldered on. Equator had already received thousands of complaints and lost millions of dollars, and the repercussions were still flooding in. For every day that Mancini refused to accept fault, we edged closer to a grinding halt. As the defects dragged on, my anger toward Mancini turned to determination. I simply needed to find a new manufacturer and prove to the world that Equator, the underdog, could bounce back. 10 years ago, I had trekked from Houston to London and Germany to Italy, an adventurer scouring the Western world looking for a manufacturer to take that golden leap of faith. A decade and many successes later, the combo had become a fixture in American homes. We had found our elusive treasure and shared it with a captivated world. But now, a tiny part had brought reality barreling down like jagged rain. I was back to square one, once again embarking upon a long, winding journey to find a combo manufacturer. This time, I would look east. go with the flow like a bird in the wind. The last thing a troubled mind needs is a 20-hour flight with little to do but think. That, however, was exactly what I got as I waited anxiously for our plane to touch down in the Middle Kingdom. With each jolt in the sky, I felt the plane shift and rock and shake, reacting to the changing climate around me. Chapter 13, The Fall. Look for three things in a person: intelligence, energy, and integrity. If they don't have the last one, don't even bother with the first two. Warren Buffett. They aren't settling, Atul. I felt my hand grip tightly around my coffee mug. Over the last 6 months, my routine coffee meetings with Clark had turned into war room discussions. It had been that way ever since I served Mancini their papers, and it didn't appear that things would change anytime soon. "So this is what betrayal feels like," I told him that morning. "Piles of evidence and not an ounce of accountability. All this time, I thought that businesses were just misunderstood. Now I'm beginning to see why people don't trust them. Look at us. We can't even trust our manufacturer to accept responsibility for their actions." Don't be afraid to fight your foe face to face. For months, as production began with Dragon in China, we had tried endlessly to incite action from Mancini. We sent them shocking reports of the defective machine's toll, hundreds of documents outlining the devastation caused by their engineer's omission of a 30-cent part. Revenue, dealers, longtime customers, employees, Equator had already lost everything imaginable. But with each new letter from Mancini denying any responsibility, I felt Equator slip further from its former self. "At least you have Dragon now," he said. "And believe it or not, Goliath has spoken. There's some new news this morning." I lunged forward in my seat. "What?" "They brought on Fisher and Kowalczyk for their legal team." He paused, letting a grin slip through for the first time in months. "They must be." Chapter 14, The Betrayal. How can a person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, unborn, and immutable kill anyone or cause anyone to kill? Bhagavad Gita 2.21. When you look up betrayal in a thesaurus, you see words like treachery, deserter, and backstabber. At first read, it all sounds a little dramatic, until the moment when you experience it for yourself. Then, there isn't a single word powerful enough to describe your hurt, shock, and disappointment. For the first few days after I learned how Clark had handled the settlement money, I felt his deceit everywhere in my body. My veins were stiff. My knuckles ached from clenched fists. My teeth pained from the stress of my clenched jaw. My mind begged me for time, a few days, to simply begin processing the pain that Clark had caused. But with my business crumbling around me, all I could do was scramble around, gluing together the pieces as my mind bubbled with toxicity. Then, a few weeks later, the betrayal grew even more deadly. "What the hell is this?" I said it aloud, filling my empty office with indignation as I held the letter summoning me to testify. As I scanned the details, I felt my emotion turn to disbelief, and then uncontrollable laughter that tumbled out into the air as my brain processed this absurdity. "Clark," I said aloud, "you've gotten us into one hell of a mess." It turns out that Taylor, Clark's trusted colleague and our company attorney, was just as devious as Clark himself. As soon as Equator filed for Chapter 11, Chapter 15, Rock Bottom. If you are going through hell, keep going. Winston Churchill. I was sitting at my wooden desk when the thought finally struck. It was a thought that had been bouncing around restlessly in my mind ever since the fraying ends began unraveling at lightning speed. So, this is rock bottom. Multiple betrayals had shaken me to the core, and now, in the wake of the storm, everything that had transpired over the last several years caught up with me, and left me sitting with my memories, numb. One of the rare blessings amidst it all was the shutdown of Dragon, which had freed us of our financial responsibilities at a time when Equator had reached an all-time low. But it also resulted in the layoff of many engineers we had worked with closely to perfect our combo and other appliances. And for the second time in just 7 years, it left Equator without a manufacturer. Yes, I thought, this was rock bottom. This was the lowest of the low that I had known would eventually come. As I looked out my window, the old glass pane covered with smudges and the signs of harsh weather, my eyes kept drifting back to a section of matted down grass in our yard. Mother Nature had done nothing to protect it. It had been trampled on by humans and animals, subject to the torrential rains so typical to Houston. The patches nearby were in the sun, and they appeared to be nearly basking. That's the difference, I thought. So, this is rock bottom. I closed my eyes and leaned back in my rigid desk chair. Some kingdom this was. My empire, the one I had so diligently built over the last decade, could now fit into a single corner of the tiny nook of my... Chapter 16, On Acquisitions. Man cannot discover new oceans unless he has the courage to lose sight of the shore. André Gide, Nobel Prize Laureate, France. Would you be interested in buying our company? It was 2008. The question hung in the air, turning the tone of our conversation from light and casual to undeniably heavy. I didn't know Susan well, but I certainly knew her husband, as did anyone who knew anything about the recreational vehicle industry. He was a long-time businessman and the scion of a successful family-owned RV appliance company that had worked with one of our prior factories. I had taken a liking to him the moment I learned about him and his business. In an industry where companies were often passed down generationally, he was a visionary who had built something from nothing. I'd always respected the way he kept his family in first place, even in the midst of the roller coaster rides of growing an empire. Built on the foundation of family, integrity, and relationships, his company, Pinnacle, had stood the test of time and competition for the last 75 years. But now, this call and that big question had come out of the blue. What did it mean, I wondered. Pinnacle had survived for decades. It had never needed anyone to keep their family business afloat. But the break of emotion in Susan's voice told me this was not just another business proposition. Arthur is dying from cancer, she continued, her voice wavering with emotion again. We don't know how much time he has left, and he's not in any position to manage the business long term. We can't go on running the business while paying for his care. I had experienced many bombshells in my career, but this one I was completely unprepared to hear. This was more than a transactional call. Chapter 17, The Awakening. Our greatest glory is not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall. Confucius, China, 551 BC. It was 2012. I had experienced many lows over the past decade, but losing Equator Plaza had shaken me to my core. I was a captain without a ship. The Equator Plaza, the pinnacle of my success, was no longer mine. It was now just another building in Houston. It was a Tuesday morning, but instead of sitting in my office looking out at the skyline, I was at home at the table near the kitchen yet again. I'd been out of the game for 3 years, and Equator was barely surviving and saddled with a tarnished reputation. Given the circumstances, the steady betrayals to spur an endless supply of anger inside me. But just like my journey itself, the situation wasn't that simple. Yes, I was angry at the system that allowed for everything that happened. I felt sheer indignation at the state, which allowed my property to be acquired and auctioned as if it was discarded without an owner by the side of the road. And I was embarrassed in front of my friends and colleagues, who saw what was unfolding and could do nothing about it. But most of all, I felt helpless. Looking back, I was like a water hyacinth caught in a whirlpool, then spat out and washed downstream, discarded forgotten, left for dead. I'd lost my first manufacturer, Watco, to Mancini, and the product defects 10 years earlier. Now, I was once again without a manufacturer. How many more obstacles could Equator overcome, I thought to myself. There was a fine line between perseverance and stubbornness, but I was ready. Chapter 18, The Comeback. Swift as the wind, quiet as the forest, conquer like the fire, steady as the mountain. Sun Tzu, China, 544 BC. I arrived back from China with a renewed sense of determination to bring my once thriving company back from the dead. I envisioned a product crafted from the future's mold, undeniable features, a streamlined design, and our eco-friendly hallmark. The machine would be called simply the Super Combo. For the first time in years, my veins were pulsing with anticipation of the venture to come. I was suddenly in pursuit of my combo again. Only this time, I had the assurance of developing it hand in hand with my manufacturer. I felt as though I was born again. Spirits were high, and the manufacturing ability was unparalleled, but that didn't mean there wouldn't be any bumps in the road. My demands for my comeback combo were stringent, and I soon discovered that cultural differences made even the most routine business tasks more challenging in China. Meetings were extremely drawn-out affairs, with the entire engineering team at the table painstakingly debating minor details. It would take nearly an hour to come to a decision, often with them saying an update was not feasible and me countering with an explanation for why an improvement had to be made. We would always leave these long meetings with a list of immediate action items, but as soon as I returned to America, progress would invariably slow to a snail's pace, necessitating another trip to China to jumpstart the process again. Thankfully, our strong relationship has helped us bridge the cultural gaps in the arduous process of product development. Chapter 19, A Full Circle. You come in this world with nothing, and you die with nothing. Timothy 6:7. As a minority businessman, I'd always been aware of my differences and intent on making an indelible first impression. Since the beginning, my morning chant as I stood before the mirror was simply, "Dress sharp, look sharp." That's the first step on the path to earning respect, I would tell myself in those early years, when I hadn't yet made a name for myself. That morning, I adjusted my tie and stepped onto the conference floor, my black shoes lost in the dusky light. In a few hours, this room would be filled with energy, distributors making deals, contractors seeking the newest products for their buildings, consumers curious about what appliances would soon take the industry by storm. But for now, it was just me and KBIS. I had arrived early for a reason. We had forged some of our most important relationships at trade shows in Germany and China, and trade shows would prove equally important for Equator now, as a way to showcase the latest innovations and connect with customers to build lifelong relationships. To this day, the more than 20 shows we attend each year remain a vital part of our marketing and customer service. All those years ago, we had hit a wall that made it clear we would have to make a choice: reevaluate and learn from our mistakes, or give up. Though every part of me felt like it was a losing battle, the day I'd pledged my allegiance to becoming an entrepreneur was my moment of defiance to the expected, a declaration against giving up. That meant that even through the most turbulent, hopelessly trying times, I could only persevere. As Equator raised its head. Chapter 20, The Future. The past is never dead. It's not even the past. William Faulkner, Nobel Prize Laureate, USA. I'm lying on the grass, exhausted, thinking of the years gone by. The betrayals, the double crossings, the greed, the lack of accountability, the lack of ethics. I pluck a piece of grass and twirl it in my fingers, feeling the sun's rays upon my face. It's the beginning of the fall season and the weather is starting to cool. The leaves from the eucalyptus trees are changing color, The low-hanging clouds start descending further and further until I'm covered in the mist. But then, in the mist, something comes over me. I smile. I think of all the people whose lives have been improved by the work I've done, the products I've spent countless time and money developing. I think about the people who have believed in me and helped me along the way, and all those who asked me that one question, "Are you good for the money?" The simple question holds a world of meaning, I think to myself. Today, far too many businesses are known more for milking the system for all it's worth than for an honest day's work. With every recurring question, it was my chance to prove that integrity still existed and that I was indeed good for the money. Focusing back into the moment, I hear the sound of a steam engine somewhere in the distance, chugging as it picks up speed. Propelled by that sound, that constant chug, Equator is taking shape before my eyes. Its past is transforming into the future, and my customers are pushing it along. In this quiet moment, I feel the momentum behind my company, behind my mission, despite the ups and downs that have blocked us, rerouted us, nearly stopped us dead in our tracks.
More information regarding today's book and the author can be found at audible.com or amazon.com. With an eclectic collection of water cooler knowledge, inspirational stories, and motivational thoughts from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Over Work podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.